You're listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Rylan. On this week's film review, we have Star Wars Rogue One, A Monster Calls, and Collateral Beauty. And talking me through all three of these stellar titles, well, hopefully anyway, is the film critic Anna Smith. Anna, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Now, I think we should begin with Star Wars Rogue One. We're going to hear a clip in just a moment, but first, Anna, in a few words, is this going to please fans or is this going to please everyone?
It's going to please fans.
Let's hear a clip.
Take hold of this moment. The Force is strong.
Make 10 men feel like 100.
We'll take the next chance. And the next. You're all rebels, aren't you?
Save the rebellion! Save the dream!
Orchestra and booms, that's what I get out of that. Okay, so this is going to please fans. Does that mean that it's going to leave everyone else a little bit hungry?
Slightly bored in parts, to be honest. But then again, there are so many millions of Star Wars fans that are going to love this. But I think more than the last one, The Force Awakens, this really does separate people into the two camps. I think if you're the kind of person that fancies your chances in a Star Wars pub quiz, this is the film for you. There are so many tiny little details, a bit like the DVD Easter eggs, you know, things that people will be spotting. And oh, this planet, that reference, gems that I can't mention here, but there were gasps of excitement in the press screening I went to. There were some real treats for hardcore fans, but you need to have seen all the films quite a few times to get a lot of these references. So I think if you're a young person or indeed just a Star Wars virgin coming to it cold, I think you would think, okay, this is a decent war film about a rebellion, great cast, Felicity Jones, Riz Ahmed, Diego Luna, but it's quite austere if you don't pick up on all those references. The real thrill is not so much in the storytelling or even the character, which is kind of sidelined for the action. The thrill is in those references to the canon.
Now, that's part of the problem, I think, that Star Wars, I mean, it's not as if Star Wars, the franchise, has any problems, really. But one of the daunting things about this franchise is that because there are so many movies now, it can feel as though, oh, is it worth going to see the new Star Wars movie? Should I go and sit back with the box set and catch up with the old ones from the 70s first? I mean, it's quite a monster undertaking, isn't it? It's part of the reason that we're now seeing this sort of standalone version, trying to start that afresh and say to people, actually, you know, you can jump on board now if you like.
Well, it's weird, isn't it? Because it's called a standalone version and it does work on its own terms because it's not meant to, none of the characters are going to particularly overlap necessarily with the other films. It takes place just before the 1970s. Seven Star Wars, but it is a story within itself. But actually, ironically, as I mentioned, I don't feel that it really worked as a story in itself, like as a standalone film in terms of just appreciating it as a lot of fun or entertainment. So it's a kind of weird, exists in a kind of weird middle zone in its own. So really, yeah, it does remain something for people really committed to watching them all and people who will get so much from it knowing what they already know about the Star Wars universe.
So it feels as though we're trying to please a few different camps here by pleasing some of those people who are the hardcore fans, but also making other people feel confident enough that you can walk in fresh. It's a little bit different to say something like that wretched, horrible thing that we saw come out earlier this year, Batman versus Superman. It's just an atrocious disaster of a thing, if ever there was one. That thing was really all about tentpoles, setting up other franchises. It was, as many people said, it's basically a 2.5 hour long trailer for other franchises. At least we haven't gone down that avenue, I suppose. That's a positive.
Yeah, absolutely. I think more than the superhero films, this feels very committed and very faithful to the origins of its story. It's not messing around with it. It's not trying to be a hybrid. Gareth Edwards, the director, is a huge fan, and it really is a film that is faithful to that spirit of the original ones. Aesthetically, I must say, it looks fantastic and very much in line with the original Star Wars films.
Well, that is Star Wars Rogue One. It's out now, and I challenge you to find somewhere where it's actually not playing. So let's move on to our next film today. That is A Monster Calls. This is the new film from J.A. Bayona. He's well known for The Orphanage. Let's hear a clip first.
He called from Monster. You, the truth that you hide, the truth you dream.
I'm I'm sorry you have to face this, but you have to be brave. Do you understand?
Anna, some people have said that this film might be a little bit too dark for a lot of kids. So there's a bit of doubt as to who it's actually trying to appeal to. Look, just from the outset, I have to say I find a bit of a problem with people that suggest that films are sometimes too dark for kids. I was watching quite dark films when I was growing up, and I feel that they helped me understand lots of things about life. And Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory is one that springs to mind. An immensely dark film, a horrendously terrifying film in certain moments. Is this film really all that dark?
I think it's interesting that you bring that up, because the film is kind of almost about that. It's because it's about a young boy trying to come to terms with the terminal illness of his mother, again played by Felicity Jones, actually. And he is really, she's sort of saying, I need to treat you like an adult. And no one's really telling him the truth. No, everyone's dancing around the subject matter, and he retreats into a fantasy world to try to understand what's going on. And really the message of the story is what you say, is that actually kids are probably capable of handling darker subjects than you might give them credit for. So it is quite dark, but I think it will appeal to adults as much as it will to, I suppose, tweens and teens who maybe have yet to experience this kind of thing. But I think for if anyone's lost someone, it certainly is a very poignant watch, because it's very much about letting go and dealing with that and how the family kind of deal with the fallout.
Another film that springs to mind then is something like Roald Dahl's The Witches that dealt with the death of a little boy's parents. There are lots of films that have really dealt with that for kids. The Lion King is another one as well. So the topic of death and parental loss is obviously something that films have tackled for quite a long time. I guess the difference there is how they deal with it. And I mean, the poster of A Monster Calls certainly suggests something that could be quite dark and scary. How far do the visuals go in making this film feel like it's a little bit scary?
Fairly far. I mean, they're very inventive and beautiful based on graphic artist's work, and he goes kind of twisted, but it's not, it just pulls back from being terrifying. There are moments of levity, but Liam Neeson's, whose voice you heard there, he plays this old yew tree that tells three sort of kind of darkish fairy tales to the young boy as he retreats into this fancied world and tries to work out what's going on in his life. So I think it gets a good balance. It is hard to know exactly who it's aimed at, but that's no bad thing. I think if you're interested in strong performances and independent films, there's a lot to enjoy here, although Sigourney Weaver, I have to say, is miscast in this with an otherwise British cast.
Oh, that's unfortunate. I love Sigourney Weaver. Talk to me about the ambiguity then, because I know you just mentioned that this boy, it's never entirely clear whether he's actually seeing the monster or if that's a figment of his imagination. That's clearly quite central to the plot. We're not supposed to really know. That's something that we walk away and think about ourselves.
And I think, yes, in Patrick Ness's book, which is based on his own screenplay, that it remains fairly ambiguous. And so it is a thought-provoking film. It hopefully is one that will provoke conversation, one that will get you thinking, and one that probably will bring a tear to your eye as well.
We've just recently seen The BFG, obviously a childhood favourite from Roald Dahl again. Hit theatres not that long ago. It was quite a friendly film, wasn't it, from Steven Spielberg? You can often expect sort of a friendly treatment of such text by Steven Spielberg, quite different to how something like Willy Wonka was treated many years ago. How do these two films compare, both telling what could be quite dark stories, the BFG really about a giant who kidnaps children? You know, it's quite, from the outset, it sounds like it would be a scary story, and yet it wasn't in that telling. How do these two films compare?
They're very different. I say Monster Calls is better than the BFG. I wasn't wild in BFG. I thought it was actually quite dull in long sways. And even though I'm a fan of Spielberg's very kind of cosy, happy gloss on everything, I don't think it really worked with that subject matter. I don't think he was the best fit for Dahl, actually. But this one, I think Juan Antonio Bayona does have a slightly more edgy sensibility, which works a bit better for me, especially with like an adolescent boy in this case.
That's A Monster Calls. It's out now across Europe and will soon be released in the US and the United Kingdom as well. And we'll move on to end today's program with Will Smith's latest film, that is Collateral Beauty. And from what I've read so far, it seems like quite a tragic film. First, let's hear a clip, though.
Who did you write the letter to?
I wrote the letter to Death.
Nice to meet you. They're charmed, I'm sure.
Nope.
People write letters to the universe all the time. Most don't get a personal response, but you are.
I don't want this.
I'm time.
I'm a gift, and you're wasting it.
You're gonna think I'm crazy,
but I'm having conversations.
I am love.
Don't try and live without me, Howard.
I saw you in her eyes when she called me daddy, and you betrayed me.
I'm the reason for everything.
Okay, so this is another film from Will Smith, who might be a bit of a stranger to the big screen lately. We haven't really seen him in very big roles recently at all, have we?
Suicide Squad, he was in, of course, but that was very different. Very different kettle of fish to this, I must tell you.
Oh, Anna, you've proven me wrong. And yes, I had forgotten about that film because that film was forgettable.
Exactly. It wasn't very good. And it couldn't be further from this film. They said that was a bit kind of dark and naughty. This is very, very sentimental indeed, as you probably gathered from that. It's got a very oddly convoluted story. The idea is that Will Smith is, again, grieving for the loss of his child, very tragically, which is a moving storyline in itself. But the way that his workmates, including Kate Winslet and Edward Norton and Michael Peña, decide to deal with it is to hire actors to pretend to be death, love, and time to confront him in the street and try and kind of jolt him out of his ennui. And the idea is he's been actually writing these letters to death, love, and time in his grief. But instead of hiring like a counsellor or doing what normal people would do, they come up with this incredibly complex story, which you don't really believe. And so he's confronted in the street by Helen Mirren and Keira Knightley and so on, by these characters, and it becomes very, very muddled.
Sounds like a storyline that might have been better dealt with on Days of Our Lives or something. Okay, I'm really not sure what to ask about that. That sounds like such a bizarre plot. Now, a lot of the reviews of this have said that the plot, though, it stretches the idea of believability so thinly that it almost just snaps completely, and there's really nothing for the audience to do but sort of smirk and feel a bit awkward. Is that how you felt?
I didn't feel as strongly as some people about that. I think, you know, the general premise is actually quite touching, and I thought Naomi Harris is really good in this, and she's good with Will Smith. I was curious to see how it panned out. I was sort of thinking, okay, well, there's probably a twist or two in here somewhere, so trying to figure that out was quite interesting, but I'm not sure if that's a reason to buy a ticket. You know, as a film critic, I was sat there thinking, oh, you know, I'm not bored. There's some really good actors and some great performances. It's all very glossy and beautiful. I'm curious to see how this pans out, but it was more about trying to work it out than finding it emotionally satisfying, even though, of course, it tugs on the heartstrings at the end for sure.
Helen Mirren, I understand, pops up as death herself. Interesting casting there. Does it feel as though there was any reason behind casting these certain people in these various roles, or is it really just more of a sort of like a celebrity game show? We'll just get people up there because, you know, they're someone.
Yeah, probably the latter. But I mean, Keira Knightley, it makes some sort of sense. I mean, in certain ways the characters are sort of set up. Keira Knightley is sort of quite flirtatious and warm and loving, so she fits love. And then Helen Mirren apparently is of the age where, you know, death is something that she can represent. So it's not very flattering on her, really.
No.
But she is really sparky and good, though. And she at least brings humour, as does Edward Norton. So there are some okay moments. I think it's very easy to try to completely bash a film like this, that it does have its moments. But at the same time, it's a bit of a misfire.
Well, it's funny, you know, because we've just talked about another film at the beginning of today's show. That was, of course, the new Star Wars film. We referenced that other Suicide Squad film. What I'm trying to say is that there are a lot of films that are part of franchises at the moment. It almost feels as though we should be grateful for something that's just a film in its own right. So it almost feels retro to have a film that's not part of a franchise lately.
Yeah, absolutely, and I welcome that. But I think it is a conversation we seem to sort of have every year, that there's always franchises and there's always reboots and there's always remakes, and it's always refreshing to have a good, well-told original story. This isn't particularly one of those, but if you're after a weepy which has a few strange surprises, then it's got something about it.
It almost feels, though, that I love a weepy. I really do. But sometimes it feels as though when we have a film like this that comes out and it's in a certain genre and it doesn't do well, then all of the studios sort of band together and think, oh, people don't like those films anymore, we won't make them again. And then it's like the end of a genre for the next 10 or so years. You know, like it happened with the romantic comedy. Katherine Heigl came along and somehow ruined romantic comedies for everyone.
Oh, that's hot.
So I've seen The Awful Truth. Don't tell me that this is sort of going to be the end of a sort of weepy drama for a little while, because that would be a bit sad.
I don't think so, no. I know exactly what you mean, and there is a problem. But I mean, I think I wouldn't be surprised if they lose money on this, because the money is on screen with that cast. It's absolutely amazing. But no, I mean, a monster calls. That's a good weepy drama if you want one.
Oh, good. I'll be popping along to see that one then. So that's Collateral Beauty. It's out now in the US and across Europe, and will soon be released in Brazil and Germany too. That brings us to the end of today's program. Thanks to my guest, Anna Smith. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Ryland. The show was produced by Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time on Monday. We'll be discussing art. But for now, goodbye from me. Thanks for listening.